Our first presenter is Paige Boyle. She will be talking about the relationship between sand top dressing and earthworm casting in warm season turf grass.
Thank you. All right, so like Chrissy said, my name is Paige Boyle, and I'm working with Drs. Richardson, Carter, and Savin at the U of A. And today we'll be talking about a little bit of my master's research from the past 2 years involving sand top dressing and casting control. A little bit of background. As probably most of us in this room know, casting on golf courses is becoming an issue. It can lead to weed disease and pest invasion, reduced mowing quality and equipment damage of those mowers, and then from a golfer's standpoint, reduced aesthetics and uneven playing surfaces. And casts are just aggregates that are expelled by earthworms, either within the profile or on the surface, and they can occur in different forms or shapes. So on the top here, we have what's referred to as kind of a granular cast, so it's a bunch of single aggregates kind of mounted together. And on the bottom is a globular cast, which is kind of one complete composite aggregate. And earthworms can be broken down into three basic ecological groups based on their burrowing and feeding habits. So they can be anisic. These are typically your larger earthworms. They create permanent vertical burrows, and they pull organic matter into those burrows to feed on. They can be endogeic. These earthworms create horizontal burrows, and they typically don't come to the soil surface. They kind of live in and feed on the soil profile. And then they can be epigeic, and these earthworms are not burrowers. They live in and feed on kind of the litter layer at the surface. And a species is kind of classified based on these, and they can be kind of a combination of those. So you can have an endoanisic worm, for example. And this does affect how they cast. So like I said, the endogeic earthworms typically don't come to the surface at all. So surface casters are more likely to be anisic or epigeic. And it is important throughout this talk to kind of remember that earthworms are beneficial organisms. They help with aeration and thatch reduction. They can help stimulate microbial activity and recycle nutrients throughout the profile. And some research has been done looking at control methods for earthworm casting. Pesticides, of course, can be effective. pH modification of the soil, high-pressure water injection, clipping removal, and then expellants and saponins are applied to kind of irritate that mucus layer and push the earthworms up to the surface. But it should be noted that all of these have had kind of varying results, and that there are no chemicals, whether they're pesticides or expellants, that are labeled for earthworm control in the U.S., so to apply these products to kill earthworms is illegal. Another method that's been looked at is sand top dressing. The idea behind this is that the sand would be abrasive on the soft-bodied earthworms and maybe reduce the moisture and organic matter in the system down to levels that maybe they wouldn't like, so they would move out of the system. But again, we've had inconsistent results with this. Henderson saw that higher rates of top dressing did reduce casting, but Williamson and Hong saw some suppression, but it didn't really last throughout the growing season. And Baker did not see any reduction in casting activity when top-dressed. And in 2010, a previous master's student at the U of A, Josh Anderson, was looking at the establishment method and cultural practice effects on sports turf. And although he wasn't really looking for earthworm activity, this is what they observed about 2 to 3 years in. They saw significantly greater casting activity in the sand root zone and heavy top-dressing treatments in that study. And that kind of leads into my objectives for my research, which were to determine the effect of root zone and soil texture, root zone soil texture and sand top dressing rate on earthworm casting activity, as well as soil moisture and temperature effects on casting activity as well. So my research was conducted at the University of Arkansas Agricultural Research and Extension Center in Fayetteville on Patriot Bermuda grass tee boxes maintained at a 15 millimeter head of cut. And we did return clippings to the system. And just to kind of give you an idea of how these systems were built up back in 2010, we have the native silt loam root zone. And over half of the area, we built up sand-capped root zone, which is 12.5 centimeters of USGA spec medium sub-rounded sand. And on each of those root zones, we have a light top dressing treatment and a heavy top dressing treatment. And that top dressing sand was also sub-rounded. The light top dressing treatment is about 0.64 centimeters applied through the growing season. And the heavy top dressing treatment is 4 applications of that 0.64 for a total of 2.5 centimeters throughout the growing season. And if you recall, these systems were established in 2010, and these top dressing treatments have been applied for the past 7 years continuously. So these are what the profiles look like as of now. So on the top, we have the light top dressing treatment. On the bottom, we have heavy top dressing. The left is the soil root zone, and the right is the sand root zone. And I'd just like to point out that the light top dressing treatments do retain kind of that horizon of organic matter, whereas the two heavy top dressing treatments have so much sand in the profile that you really can't tell them apart visually. On each sampling day, I collected data on cast count, soil moisture, and soil temperature. Each plot was about 7.5 meters squared, and cast counts were measured or counted with the aid of a 1.5 by 1.5 meter grid, just so I didn't double count anything. They were counted at least twice a month and averaged by month, starting in November 2015, and I'm still collecting data on this. And after counts were completed, we did remove the cast from the system just so that they weren't recounted the next sampling date. And this was done either by mowing during the growing season or with a drag mat. And soil moisture was measured using a TDR-300 from Spectrum with 7.5 centimeter rods, and temperature was measured at about 10 centimeter depth. Both of these, 5 samples per plot per sampling date, and they were averaged. Experimental design was a 2-factor randomized complete block with 4 replications of each root zone top dressing combination. Month was included for repeated measures, and like I said earlier, data were analyzed as monthly averages. Nonlinear Gaussian regression was used to assess correlation between soil moisture and soil temperature with casting activity, and the regressions were also used to determine the point at which casting was maximized. And this is an analysis of variance showing the effects of root zone top dressing and month on casting activity. We can see that we did have a root zone by top dressing by month 3-way interaction. And I'll have a couple graphs set up like this. So on the x-axis will be date, on the y-axis will be cast counts per meter squared. On this particular graph, the top half is the light top dressing treatment, the bottom half is the heavy top dressing treatment, and the triangles are the soil root zones, the diamonds are the sand root zones, so we're looking at those effects within each top dressing treatment. What we saw that we had significantly greater cast counts in the sand root zone when lightly top dressed in the fall and the spring of both years, but no significant difference in cast counts between root zones when we heavily top dressed. I'd like to point out now that in the light top dressing soil root zone, we had very little casting activity throughout the last 2 years, and that'll become important kind of as I continue with the results. Same axes here, except now the top half is the soil root zone, bottom half is the sand root zone, the circles are the heavy top dressing, and the squares are the light top dressing treatment, so we're looking at those effects. We saw that we had significantly greater cast counts when heavily top-dressed in the soil root zone in the fall and the spring of both years. And no significant difference in year one cast counts between top-dressing treatments in the sand root zone. However, in year two, we did see some difference with greater cast counts in the lightly top-dressed treatments in that sand root zone. Looking into our regressions now, the x-axis here is soil moisture, and on the y-axis are the cast counts per meter squared. Again, the top half is the soil root zone, bottom half is sand root zone, left is heavy top dressing, right is light top dressing. We can see that the moisture regressions were not significant and that moisture is not a significant predictor of cast counts. However, when we look at the soil temperature regressions here, we can see that these are significant, and temperature explains about 12 to 40% of the variation in casting activity, depending on kind of what treatment combinations you're looking at. And the lines here indicate the critical temperature at which casting was maximized, and it ranged from about 11 degrees to about 14 in the soil root zone, and then 13 for both of the sand root zone treatments. And when we take those temperatures and compare them across the treatment combinations, there's not a significant difference, but they do all fall within the previously published kind of optimum temperature range of 10 to 20 for earthworm activity. And so to summarize, on silt loam soil, we saw fewer casts under light sand top dressing compared to heavy top dressing, where we did see an increase in casting activity. In the sand root zone, top dressing grate generally had very little effect on capping activity, except in that winter spring of this year. And so in general, all we can say at this point is that sand top dressing may impact earthworm casting activity. And we wanted to kind of see why that might be. So if you recall, the light top dressing soil root zone had very little casting activity throughout, but all the other kind of heavy sand systems did. And so why are these earthworms casting more in predominantly sand plots when sand is supposed to deter earthworms from the system? So casts were collected in April of this year, and particle size was analyzed for all of those. However, not enough material was collected from that lightly top-dressed soil root zone system, so I'll only be comparing those other three treatment combinations moving forward. Organic matter analysis was also conducted down to a 20-centimeter depth. And just to kind of set this up for you, the heavy top-dressing soil root zone is on the left, heavy top-dressing sand root zone is in the middle, and the light top-dressing sand root zone is on the right here. We can see that the light top-dressing sand root zone had significantly less sand and more silt than the other two combinations, and the heavy top-dressing sand root zone did have significantly less organic matter in the soil profile. That does make sense. You know, we have the sand root zone, we've heavily top-dressed, which is supposed to reduce organic matter in that system. But again, keep in mind that all of these were heavy casting systems. And so our hypothesis right now is that earthworms in these sandy areas may need to forage more to consume enough organic matter. And since they're foraging more, they're obviously going to be casting more in these systems. But more research would be needed to establish where exactly in the profile these earthworms are feeding. It's also important to keep in mind that species composition could affect casting. If you recall those ecotypes that I mentioned early on in this talk, you know, if we have predominantly epigeics or erinesics, that could impact whether we have more casting in these systems versus endogeic earthworms. And I'll be touching a little bit on identification of some of the earthworms that we found in Arkansas and Oklahoma at a poster tomorrow evening. And angularity could also affect casting activity. So again, the sand is supposed to be abrasive against these bodies, soft-bodied organisms. And we're using sub-branded angularity sand. So maybe if we were using something a little angular, more angular, that could affect the results. So more research should probably be done looking at that as well. I'd like to thank USDA and the U of A Division of Agriculture for funding, and then of course my advisors and the Turf Science Group. And with that, I can take questions.
We've got time for two or three questions.
Maybe not.
Anybody?
So the question was, did we mow the casts, and did it create kind of a muddy surface, or were they more sandy to where they could break up? In my plots, yes, we did mow, just because we had to mow three times a week anyway. They do smear if they're more, I guess a better way to say that is if they're less sandy. And we did have a lot of mixture in whether they were heavy sand or whether they had some more soil kind of in there, so we kind of got a variety of things, and we did get some smearing, but we would have gotten that too with the drag mat, so there wasn't a good way to kind of combat that.
We have time for one more question. Anybody has any?
I have a couple of as well on our fairway. I've never been top of this, and we've been a while, but
The question is, should he start top dressing on his fairways? At this point, I don't really have a good answer for you because it's just kind of varied. And like I said, I do think that species composition probably has something to do with that. So maybe figure out what species you have, and then we can kind of talk a little more later.
Okay, thank you, Paige.